Good afternoon, all. Let's move to Parshas Noah. So I want to focus on today is the rainbow, the sign of peace, the sign that Hashem makes with the Jewish people for the world, in fact, that He will not bring another flood. And let's learn through the verses. There are a lot of questions to be asked. I think I prepared more than an hour's worth of them, so we'll get to whatever we can get to. Okay. And take it from there. Let us begin on about page 38, 39. Let's start there. Skip around a little bit. Try to read the verses a little bit quicker than we usually do to get the full picture, and then we'll go back and address some of the issues. So, as you'll note on page 39, our beautiful art scroll little headers on the side of the page, where we're up to in the story is where the earth has finally dried out. It's the end of the entire flood. Noah has been given the command to specifically leave and begin life again on dry land. Let's start with verse 20. Vayiva Noach Mizbeach LaHashem, Pasuk Chav Noach, the bottom of the page, Noach builds an altar to Hashem, Vayikach Mikola Behemoth HaTahor Mikol HaOif HaTahor, Vayal Oilos BaMizbeach, and he takes of all of the living animals. After all, he's been with these animals for the last year, and he brings sacrifices to Hashem, which is interesting just parenthetically as I said that, just thinking about it. In general, a person brings a sacrifice, it was a big deal, it was a financial commitment, he's taking off his livestock. Can you imagine what it was like for Noah after he cared for these animals, was the person who built their teva for 120 years, fed them every single day on time, and now as soon as they survive, what does he do? He takes them and he sacrifices them. The meaning that they must have had of his giving of those animals to Hashem as a sacrifice. That's just parenthetical. In any case, what's Hashem's response to this? Verse 21, Pasuk Chof Aleph, Vayorach Hashem es reyach hanichoyach. Hashem smells the pleasing aroma of the sacrifices and says the following thing, Vayomer Hashem alibo, Lo oisif lekalel od es ha'adamo ba'avor ha'adam. I will not continue to curse again the ground because of man. Ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra minu urav. The imagery of man's heart is evil from his youth. The very beginning of man's thought processes are evil. Says Hashem, I will not curse the ground again. V'lo osif od lahakosas kol chai kasher asisi. Nor will I again continue to smite every living being as I have done. So Hashem basically here, Rashi quotes from Chazal, takes a shavua to himself, takes a vow, an oath to himself. The phrase lo osif is repeated twice, that I will not continue to do so. So the sages understood from here a vow that Hashem has now said, I will no longer do this ever again. I will not bring destruction to the world ever again. And that's his response to smelling the aroma from the sacrifices offered by Noach as he exits the Teva. So we have a shvua that Hashem took. Okay, let's skip a little bit. We're on page 40, 41. At that point, from verses 1 through 7, we have the header, rebuilding a ruined world, and God's covenant with Noah. He tells them, he blesses them, they should be fruitful, they should multiply. He permits them to eat food, to eat animal meat for the first time. Adam HaRishon was not permitted to eat meat, he only ate vegetation, and here Adam is now permitted to eat meat. He's given the prohibition of eating blood. And the prohibition of murder is mentioned here. Chazal understood from that as well. A little break. Let's pick up in depth from verse 8. That's where the rainbow is going to come in. Okay, let's start with Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Vayomer Elokim al Noach vel banav ito lemor. Hashem speaks to Noach and to his son, saying, the Ramban parenthetically points out here that really Hashem only spoke to Noach, and Noach communicated this to his sons, but that we do not see that all three of his sons were on the level of prophecy to have received this directly from him. Va'ani, as for me, says Hashem, hinini mekim es brisi itchem, I will establish my covenant with you and with your offspring after you. Now again, remember what we just read, that Hashem has already taken a vow. He has sworn to himself that he will never again bring destruction to the world as he has just done. Now Hashem says to Noach, I will establish a covenant, a bris, with you and with your offspring. Veis kol pasuk yud, veis kol nefesh hachaya asher etchem ba'oif ba'behema, and with you, with all the birds, with all the animals, every living being that is with you, everything that has departed from this teva. 11. V'hakimosi es brisi etchem, v'lo yikareth kol basar od mimei hamavol, v'lo ye'od mavol l'shachei sa'aret. I will confirm this covenant. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. So Hashem now says to Noach, he's already sworn to himself that he'll never do it. Noach exits the teva. He's giving a blessing. He's given a blessing to be fruitful, to multiply. He's given a new prohibition of eating blood, given the permission to eat meat, beginning his new life. And Hashem says, I have a covenant to make with you. I will never again bring a flood. I will never again bring this type of destruction to the world. Any questions so far?
Is he speaking of destruction only in the form of flood? The flood, or...
He does specifically mention that.
But I mean, exclusively that? In other words, would there be other ways that we might be destroyed? And, you know... On that level, on that scale.
In this covenant that he's making, the language is specifically flood. His vow that he took to himself was general. I will never just curse the ground and destroy it. Yeah.
Thank you.
What is it? Yeah.
Initially, upon creation, did Hashem make a covenant with Adam HaRishon, or was that just...
Seems not that way. Yeah, no, there wasn't. There was not.
No covenant.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was... Be fruitful and multiply,
right.
But only don't eat from this. But there was, so this is the first instance of a covenant where both parties are obligated.
What do you mean?
I mean the use of the word covenant in this context
mm-hmm.
is a new thing.
What does Noah have to do?
Well, what does Noah have to do?
Yeah.
Can't complain.
I didn't say that, but...
Well, that's the question. What is that?
Oh, you're asking if there's a bris. And it seems like it's really just... This seems at this point like it's a one-way bris, a one-way sign that Hashem is simply giving us a sign that He will never again destroy the world. That's through a flood. That's correct. There's no reference here to anything that we as people need to do. Which is interesting. I don't know if you meant it that way. You're asking me
that's
a question.
What I meant.
Generally,
Adam
a bris
didn't have a covenant, but he was expected to do certain things.
Correct. Noah has those same expectations, except previously when he failed those expectations, a mabul came to destroy the world.
I suppose.
And now Hashem is saying there'll be consequences, but I am hereby giving my word. I'm giving a sign to you that I will never do it again with a flood.
He could do it with something else.
And that doesn't seem... I mean,
that's a question, I guess.
Yeah, that's what Dana was asking. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so to piggyback on what Paul said, then is God surprised that His creation is evil and capable of so much
okay,
evil?
Okay, great question. I'm not getting into that. It's way too much beyond what I wanted to get into. That's a question that would go at the end of Parshas Bereishis, last week's Parsha, where at the end of the Parsha, when the people begin to go off the path that Hashem had wanted for them, the Torah has the language of Vayinochem Hashem ki osa es ha'odom ba'aretz. Hashem either regretted or reconsidered, different ways of translating that word, that He made man, and His heart, and He had... Vayis'atzev el libo. Literally means that His heart was saddened. So Hashem doesn't have a heart. What does it mean He was saddened? Your question is on that pasuk. What does it mean that Hashem regretted or reconsidered making man and was saddened by His shortcomings? Was that a surprise to Him? That's a great question. On that pasuk is really where I would put it, and well beyond the scope of what I wanted to cover today. Okay, the more obvious question I was thinking.
What did Noah do to deserve this bris? All he did was make a sacrifice, it sounds like.
Even less than that. He didn't even do that. In other words, the sacrifice... What happened after Noah's sacrifice? What was Hashem's response to the sacrifice? What did we just read? What did Hashem do? He swore to Himself that He would never bring destruction again. Then, out of the blue, on His own, what does Hashem do? He makes a covenant. He gives Him a sign, which is going to be, we're going to read in a moment... The rainbow is going to be the sign that he'll never do it again. So Noah didn't do anything to get this sign. All that happened was he brought the sacrifices on that. Hashem swore to himself, I'll never bring destruction again. Then, out of the blue, Hashem says, I'll give you a sign that I'll never bring it again, and that's going to be in the form of the rainbow. So the more obvious question that I was thinking was, why do we need the sign for? Once God already swore to himself and said, I will never again bring destruction to the world, what's added with the sign of the rainbow?
It's a reminder.
Is this not somewhat symbolic that that we dedicate ourselves, our souls, our spirits to our Creator? And that's what we talk about when we talk about a sacrifice. That's basically the symbology behind that. And that maybe it's an act of forgiveness. And just because we did it once doesn't mean that we may not slip down the road.
You're speaking of, the sacrifice or the rainbow?
I beg your pardon?
Are you speaking about the sacrifice or the rainbow?
Not making reference to the rainbow, more in the way of the sacrifice.
Okay, I agree. But as far, so what is the rainbow doing?
Well, future generations.
We're getting the sign that in spite of whatever it is, our behavior, that a promise is made to us that, again, that there will be no further flood.
Through the sign of the rainbow.
Yeah.
All right, let's read a little bit more, because we need to read some more before we can get some other answers. Okay, 12. Yud Beis. Vayomer Elokim, Zos Ois HaBris Asher Ani Nosein Beini Uveinichem. This is going to be the sign that I will give between me and between you, and every living being that will always be there for future generations. Es Kashti Yud Gimel Nosati Be'anon Vaisala Os Bris Beini Uvein Haaretz. I have set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. That it shall happen when I place a cloud over the earth, and the bow will be seen in the cloud. The language the Torah uses, Hashem says, I will remember my covenant between me and you and every living being, and the water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. Rashi comments, why does he need to remember? Because when it enters my mind that really I want to destroy you again, correct, says Rashi, kisha all of the machshava, when it goes up in my mind, so to speak, however we could speak about that in before Hashem, to bring darkness and destruction to the world, then I will see this rainbow and will remember this covenant that I am giving you, this sign that I will in fact never again destroy the world. Let's just finish the paragraph at 16. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it to remember again the everlasting covenant between God and every living being among all flesh that is on earth. Again we have this language. This is the sign of the covenant. Okay, so quick summary would be, so Hashem takes a vow to himself, he swears, I will never again bring destruction. Then he says to Noah, I'm going to give you a sign of the covenant that I will never again bring destruction. I'm going to place my rainbow up in the clouds, and when I see that rainbow, despite the fact that it will enter into my mind that really I should destroy you, really this should be the end, I should bring destruction to the world, I will see the rainbow and remember this covenant that I am making with you, that I will never again bring destruction to the earth.
Does this imply that there weren't any rainbows before now, that this is when
excellent.
The rainbow was...
Okay, we've got to talk about that. So there are a bunch of major questions, a couple of minor questions that need to be discussed with... Okay, so here, this is the story, what we just finished is the story. Flood, destruction, Noah survives, brings the sacrifice, Hashem swears I'll never do it again. Then Hashem says, I'll give you a sign that I'll never do it again. When I see the rainbow, I will remember, says Hashem, this covenant, that even though I want to destroy you, this will be my eternal remembrance, that it will remind me that I'm not going to destroy you. So you're pointing out, Dina's pointing out, question number one would be, did the rainbow exist beforehand? What is a rainbow?
Fraction of light.
Natural occurrence, right? If you create the sun, you create water, you create humidity in the air, moisture in the air, you're going to get a rainbow. So what kind of sign is this anyway that the rainbow should serve as a sign? It's not like anybody did anything. How does the rainbow work as a sign? Excellent question. We have to deal with that. did the rainbow exist beforehand? All those, mm-hmm. That's the same type of question as far as that goes. What other questions do we have?
Why does Hashem need a sign?
Excellent. But that's not what he says, right? What does the pasuk say? Really, I want to destroy you. Oh, goodness, there's that rainbow again. Remember? Yes. I promise I'm not going to destroy you. What?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. But that's what the pasuk says. When I want to destroy you, I will remember when I see this rainbow that I am not permitted to destroy you. Interesting. What are we supposed to do? Does Hashem need a reminder? Right? And why does he need a sign at all? If he already gave us his word, if he already promised himself in the beginning, as soon as Noach brings these sacrifices and he says, I swear I'll never do this again, what do we need at all this reminder, another sign? I have to ask another question once we're asking questions. What's the significance of the rainbow? Once you're choosing signs, and you can, you know, choose anything in the world that you want, what's with the rainbow specifically, that should be a sign where, despite the fact that you want to destroy the world, you'll have the rainbow and that will somehow be that sign? If you're answering that question, I don't want to answer that question.
Well, the rainbow often comes after rain, so we associate rain with the rainbow.
Okay,
rainbow.
So on the most simple level, which is and not simple like in a derogatory way, in the same way, meaning right away you can say, well, it makes a lot of sense because the flood came from
rain.
So a rainbow which comes after the rain, generally, will be that sign of, really, I wanted to do more, but I stopped it here and just left the rains as they were in order not to make it into a flood and destroy the world. That would be a fine answer as far as why the symbolism of a rainbow specifically.
That's the physical part, but really, if mankind has experienced the flood one time and sees rain coming a lot, so therefore there might be fear and a loss of faith and this looking up, and so the rainbow may be a reminder for mankind to continue to have faith in God and in a future, that there will be a future and that that life is not just pointless, just one thing after another and slam and we're done.
Okay, good.
So it's the chesed of God, but with a visible sign.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, let's learn a little. Let's see if we can piece together some answers here. Okay, let's start with the Rashi. Rashi is bothered by the question, one of the questions that we asked as, why was this necessary, that Hashem had to add a sign to that which he already swore to himself? Now, again, that was in verses 21 and 22, on pages 38, 39, and 40. Right after Noach builds the altar in verses 20, and Hashem smells the pleasing aroma, and said in his heart, I will not continue to curse again the ground because a man, his heart is evil from his youth. I will never again continue to smite every living being as I've done. He already, and the Chazal understand from that it was a shvuah, it was an oath that he took to himself never to destroy the world. So why does he then give Noach this covenant, this bris of the sign of the rainbow? Why was that necessary? Why wasn't it sufficient just to have his vow? So Rashi comments, if you want to follow it inside, it's on page 40, the very last Rashi on the page, on page 40. Rashi says, Va'ani hinini maskim ani imach. I agree with you, Hashem says to Noach. What does that mean that Hashem says to Noach, I agree with you? Shoyah Noach doeg lasot bepirio virivio. In between verses 20 and 21, which we read, and the sign of the rainbow, came the blessing of verse 1 on page 40 here, in the beginning of chapter 9. Hashem blesses Noach and his sons and says to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the land. And Noah said, you know, God, that really sounds very nice, but last time I tried that, didn't really work out so well for us. You destroyed everything that we created. For 10 generations, we've been populating the world, and you wiped them out. And now, the first thing as I step off this ark, you tell me, go out, be fruitful, and populate the land? Not interested. You're going to destroy it again. How do I know you're not going to do that? So Hashem says, I agree, I will give you this sign, etein l'cha'os, I will make this new additional covenant as a sign that I won't destroy my world again. Ask the commentators, the Ramban, the Maharal, So when Hashem swore to himself, Noach says, not good enough. I'm not confident. I'm not comfortable getting involved in raising families. Again, you might destroy the world. So Hashem says, okay, I'll put a rainbow up in the sky. Great. Now you got yourself a deal. What's the difference between Hashem swearing to himself that he won't destroy the world, and now that we have this rainbow, all of a sudden things are different? So the Maharal uses the language to explain that an oath, a sign, is somehow stronger than a shvua. We'll explain this. Let's go through two levels. Number one, a shvua, an oath, can be nullified. There's an entire parsha in the Torah which describes that. We do this every year on Yom Kippur when we say Kol Nidre, we do Hataras Nedarim. Any vow that I take, I can hereby nullify and say, well, I didn't say that under these conditions. I only made that vow or that oath under conditions X, Y, or Z. I didn't realize it would be like this. So there's a halachic mechanism in place that says an oath or a vow can be nullified. You can go to a Beis Din and say, I didn't mean it, I didn't realize, I regret having said it, and they can actually nullify it. So Noach, as the Maharal explains, said, your vow, God, is really very nice. I appreciate that you took a shvua, that you're never going to destroy the world again. That might not last forever. I want more than that. So Hashem says, no problem, I'll give you the sign of the rainbow. What's the significance of giving the sign? So the Ramban explains, and where he's explaining this is, in a later discussion, next week's parsha, that the Ramban describes an entire idea that Maisa Avos Siman Levanim, that the actions of our forefathers, of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, are a sign as to what's going to happen to us in future generations. And within the context of that discussion, he gets into talking about why you have a specific, why do we need a sign? Why do I need Avram to have actually gone down to Mitzrayim in order to show that we're going to do that? Like, what's the significance of him doing it, that we're going to do it? Why do we have that dichotomy? So within that context, he describes the following idea, which I'll read a few lines inside because of the complexity of what he's saying, and we'll see if we can understand it as best we can, because my limited understanding is obviously going to come across as I try to explain this. Says the Ramban, duh, you need to know the following principle. Kol gzeiros irin. Every time there is a decree in heaven, kasher teitze mikoach gzeira el poel dimyon, when it goes, leaves the realm of potential decree, simple words, an idea, thought, and is brought into a symbolic act in the world. It's taken from the realm of something out there and put into motion in some way, even if it was in a symbolic way. Then no matter what, that decree will be fulfilled. Says the Ramban, an idea, and you sow a fundamental point in the way that Hashem communicates with us and all of prophecy, that if you just take words, words have a certain power to them. Words that existed not only in the realm of words, but were brought down into existence in some symbolic act, will be fulfilled on a totally different level. And he brings an example, he brings a couple of examples, just to share one. He brings from Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who says, when you finish reading this book, he gave a certain sefer to be read. He says, take a stone to it, tie the stone around the book, and throw it into the river. And thus, says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, will Bavel be washed away with water. Says Ramban, Yirmiyahu, if your prophecy is that Bavel is going to be destroyed, if your prophecy is that they're going to be flooded away and they're going to be gone from the world, like, what, you're taking a book and a stone and you tie it around and you throw it, oh, like that book sunk to the bottom of the Euphrates, so too will Bavel sink. Why do you do it? Says the Ramban, because if you pay attention to the way the prophets speak, they always and often will do that, in which they will take their prophecy and put it into some real life motion, some movement, some sign, and when that happens, then it becomes a totally different thing. It says, as Elisha says, shoot the arrow, and then he said, it is an arrow of salvation from Hashem. So instead of just saying, says the Ramban, Hashem will come and save you, he says, shoot an arrow. Oh, just like the arrow has been shot, so too will Hashem, so to speak, shoot an arrow of salvation. So he brings examples of these, he brings a couple of others, where there are symbolic acts that are done, and once an act is done, it has changed the nature of the prophecy onto a different level. Now, we who are not holding a prophecy, it's hard to get like exactly what that means, but on that level, the Ramban tries to explain that the oath, the sign of a rainbow, where Hashem says it's not just a promise that I made, which has the ability of being nullified, it's a promise with a symbolic act that says now there's a rainbow in the world, that rainbow will forever serve as a reminder, brings it up a level to a different level where Noah can be comfortable with the idea of I will now go out and populate the world, I'm not concerned about anything happening. Now, on a less metaphysical level, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz has a different approach as to the benefit of the added oath as opposed to just the promise itself. And he brings, in explaining his idea, the following Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses a number of people, specifically men, Yosef, Boaz, and a gentleman will be introduced named Paltiel, who were in situations where they could have been with a certain woman, and because were not permitted to, withheld themselves and didn't do it. Yosef, of course, in the story of Aishas Potiphar, the wife of Potiphar, he's alone in the house with her, he had an opportunity to sin, and he didn't do it. So the Gemara says, that was really great, Yosef, but you should know, that which you did doesn't even rate in comparison to what Boaz did. Because Boaz, at the time, Yosef, the woman who was at your feet, so to speak, Yosef, was a married woman. So that you were able to hold yourself back, alright, but after all, she was a married woman. Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night during the story of Rus, and who is lying at his feet? This woman, Rus, who he actually had the ability to marry, which he eventually does. She was a single girl, not already married, who had been married to a person who it should have come down to, he would have been the next in line to marry her. And he had the opportunity to live with her, but he didn't because it hadn't been totally worked out in halacha. So the Gemara says, Yosef, your act was pretty strong. But it doesn't even compare to Boaz because Boaz wouldn't have been violating anything as bad as that. And he was able to withhold himself. And the Gemara says, and Boaz, he doesn't even compare to Paltiel. Who is Paltiel? Shaul HaMelech gave one of his daughters to Paltiel to marry. But Paltiel held that she was already married, Michal, to David. Unclear is the whole discussion. She was, she wasn't. He determined that she was already considered married. Even though Shaul HaMelech, the king of the Jewish people, held, she's not married, I am giving her to you as a wife. So Paltiel says, the Gemara said, in the following language, What was Paltiel's greatness? Shepaltu kel min ha'aveira, that Hashem, so to speak, saved him from sinning. Ma asa, what did he do? Noetz cherev beino leveina, he put a sword between himself and her, between his bed and her bed. Amar kol ha'osek badover ze yidkar b'chayv, anyone who will get involved in this act should be pierced by a sword. And through that was able to hold himself for years with a woman who was considered by the Jewish people to be his wife, and he never went near her. So the Gemara presents that hierarchy, that Yosef, yeah, that was really great, but after all, she was a married woman. That doesn't even compare to Boaz, who was dealing with a single woman, who he was permitted to marry, but that doesn't even compare to Paltiel, who was married to her. Shaul gave his daughter Michal to him as a wife, and he said, I'm not going near her. Now, that's the Gemara. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, what does Paltiel do to be able to succeed in doing this? What does he do? He puts a sword in between the beds and says, whoever engages in this act should be pierced by a sword. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz asks, so he couldn't take the sword out? Like that sword, like he couldn't, you know, this is his wife, right? He couldn't have gone somewhere else? Like what does that mean that he put a sword in between and all of a sudden this is going to hold him back for years and years and years? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, sometimes a person is inspired by something. You're inspired to take on a new behavior, a new act, a new mitzvah, or to refrain from doing something. Inspiration only lasts so long. And what you need to do is you need to take a sign of something and put it into place so that that will remain, so when the inspiration dissipates, but you're left with, oh yes, that was my reminder of the place that I once was in. That's a reminder of what I once felt. And it'll keep me to my ideals, even when my natural passion isn't there so much anymore. So he sticks the sword in and he says, this will be forever my reminder that I once was so passionate about. This is not appropriate, this is not correct, because as the years go on, I'm going to begin to think she's just my wife like everybody else. But I don't hold that. I think she's not my wife. So in order to, as a reminder, when you're inspired, you do something, that when you do that, that will serve as your reminder always as to what's going on. So Chaim says, he says, this is the pshat in the rainbow. He says, Hashem doesn't need a reminder, but He's teaching us this lesson. He's teaching, where did Baltiel get that idea from? He suggests, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz suggests, he was Rosh Hashiva in the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim about less than 100 years ago, says he suggests that the Derech Eretz, that's the way of the world that Hashem is teaching us, that when He took us an oath, and Noach says, how do I know? I'll give you a sign. That sign will always be a reminder. And that's sort of teaching us that idea that when you need to remind yourself of something, of inspiration that was once there, it might not always remain there. Sometimes that's what you need to do. So Hashem, so to speak, put a rainbow in as a reminder for Himself. You know, He, of course, Himself does not need the reminder, but it's that lesson to us about that type of behavior to do. And that's a totally different angle than the Ramban, who says that right, the rainbow is because a prophecy together with an action is a different level than a prophecy alone. He's coming from a more... on a Musar perspective to think about the idea that Hashem is teaching us this lesson by putting it into place, putting it into practice with a visible sign that will serve as that reminder. Yeah.
Question. A signature versus an oath in Halacha, how does that compare? In other words, could you look at the rainbow as a signature in the sky, so to speak, and that would be more, is that halachically more holding than oath? As you said, you could remove an oath. What about a signature?
I don't know. What does it mean, a signature?
You sign a document, a shtar, let's say, a contract.
So
does the signature hold? Can you undo with a Yom Kippur, like the Shua, the virtue you were speaking about? Is that something you undo?
If you took a, if you signed a document that most signatures are only, documents are only holding court if it's like a monotheist, between two people. Like, I mean, you took a signature and you said, I'm going to put on tefillin every day, and you signed it? And that is an oath. I don't think it'll make a difference, but maybe. Yeah.
Just looking at number 7, which is the 7 different colors in the rainbow,
yeah,
which actually correspond to the 7 different chakra systems within the human body, the different colors, and they can be seen energetically. And the number 7 with the term cessation,
yes,
is the same thing with man ceasing the behavior, whatever the behavior is that inspired the flood.
Most of what you said is way over my head. I think it sounds good. I think we'll get to a little bit of that at the end. I think.
You know, we do this kind of action when we go up for Tashlich.
Right.
When
excellent.
We go for Tashlich, what does the piece of bread have to do with anything?
We've already done
everything.
We told not to do that.
Right.
But
what are you supposed to do? You don't do bread.
Why don't you do bread? Yeah. I always did bread. I was raised on bread.
Yeah, that's good.
You missed that class.
Yeah. Well, but you're right. Even if we're not doing bread, just going to the water is symbolic as opposed to crowding Hashem through water.
We're just negating the whole idea of Rav Shmulevitz that we put
That's separate issue. We'll talk about another. You're right. We do often, we do symbolic things very often.
Okay,
we'll leave aside the Rosh Hashanah discussion and whether or not you are or are not allowed to feed fish on Yontif and whether or not totally separate discussion.
Okay,
let's get back to Dina's discussion. The way that this seems to be, like, how would you say, would you have assumed that the rainbow existed before or after this episode? Did the rainbow, let me have to ask it simply, did the rainbow already exist in the world before the flood?
Mm-hmm. I thought so.
Why would you think so?
Because it's part of nature.
The natural phenomena. So the Ramban and others address this question as well. Here we have this big sign, we're trying to understand the meaning of this sign that Hashem is going to say, I'm going to put into place an actual sign to remind me never to bring this flood again. And what's that sign going to be? It's going to be the rainbow. How do you make a sign out of an incident, an episode that always was already there? It existed before. And how exactly does that work? So there are those commentators, the Ibn Ezra and the Maharal. I don't know how often they agree. But they agree in this instance over here that the rainbow actually did not exist before this point in time.
Oh,
that the nature of sunlight was such that it was not refracted into a rainbow, and that this rainbow was created, the reality of the rainbow was created as this sign to Hashem at this point and for the first time and moving forward. And I can't argue, I mean, I just, this is what they say. The Ramban argues on, well, I don't want anything like that. The Ramban brings others who argue and say, this is a fact of nature. There is no evidence that we have that nature was changed as the sign. And the Ramban seems to show from the psukim themselves, in which Hashem says, I have placed my rainbow in the clouds. It sounds like the rainbow already existed before, and it's just being placed in the clouds to serve as a sign, not that he's creating the nature of the rainbow himself. And the Ramban is of the approach, he quotes the Greek philosophers and scientists of the day that prove indisputably that rainbows always existed. It had to always exist. They were a natural part of the world that always existed. So the Ramban brings that approach, at which point then you would say the sign is not that I'm creating a new sign, I'm simply going to use that which exists as my sign. And if you ask, how can you do that? Like, why would that serve as a sign? So the Ramban brings various other instances in the Torah where we use other natural events as a sign. And we'll see, I believe it's in the Parshas Lech Lecha as well, where Avraham makes a sign that Hagal Hazeh, this mound of rocks, will serve as an eternal remembrance between you and between me that we've made this covenant. There are things that exist that were, even though they already existed before, they are now going to serve as another reminder, even though it's a natural occurrence, that it will serve as a reminder. But if we go this route, if we go the route that the Ramban wants to primarily take, which is that the rainbow existed before and it's now going to be used as the sign, we're then going to have to address why choose that. If I'm first creating the rainbow out of nothing, so then we can say, alright, this is a new thing, it only existed as a reminder, so it will serve as an eternal reminder. But if it already existed, and now I'm just taking that which already exists to serve as my sign, what is it about the rainbow that serves as that eternal reminder? So the Ramban suggests as follows. What's the shape of a rainbow?
It's an arc.
It's an arc. If you had a bow and arrow, how would you hold your bow to shoot an arrow? So you hold it with, in a way that obviously the arc faces away from you, and then through that you pull your string and you shoot your arrows. So if Hashem were holding a bow, so to speak, how would the bow have looked? It would have been the opposite of what the rainbow actually is. So if Hashem were waging war, so to speak, with the inhabitants of the world, symbolized by firing an arrow upon them, the rainbow would have actually been going in the other direction. So the Ramban says the rainbow was chosen as the sign of peace because the shape of the rainbow is the opposite of that. It's backwards. It's as if Hashem is saying, I am not shooting arrows down upon you. In fact, the sign of peace, the Ramban writes, when a waging army wanted to either surrender or show overtures of peace, they would hold their bow in the opposite way, saying, I have no intention to use this as a weapon. I'm holding it backwards in the way that it can't serve as a weapon. So to speak, so says the Ramban, so that Hashem chose the rainbow to be the agent of an eternal covenant of peace that I don't intend to destroy the world because the shape is backwards from what would have been had he been engaged in, so to speak, waging a war against the world. That's one level. On another level, and this is where we're going to get a little bit beyond my capacity, we're going to enter into a little bit what you were saying, and we'll see what we can explain as best we can. Let's take a pause from this discussion and begin a new discussion that engages the rainbow. The Gemara in Maseches Chagiga has a discussion of various things that if a person engages in, is viewed as if it would have been better had they never been created. One of the things is one who is not chos al kvodo shel makom, one who does not care about or protect the honor or glory of Hashem. Someone who disregards the kavod, the honor of Hashem, on he, the Gemara says, it would be better as if he had never been created. Who is a person, asks the Gemara, who is considered to have disregarded the honor of Hashem? Who is such a person?
A murderer? Tanya?
Nope. Gemara says two things. first of which you'll agree, and the second one you're going to scratch your heads. First one says, it's really the second one, but I'm presenting it in the opposite way. Says the Gemara, somebody who sins privately, who in public presents a certain way of life, presents a certain, this is who I am, this is what I believe in, and in private, they do all sorts of sins. Says the Gemara, that's a person who is fearful and honorable in front of mankind, but doesn't really care about the honor of Hashem. Such a person who disregards the honor of Hashem by sinning privately, but not being willing to do it publicly, is a person upon whom we say would have been better had they never been created. Who is the second person who disregards the honor of Hashem? Nope. Nope. Because he's just, you know, disregarding everything. Who is the second person? One who stares at a rainbow. Someone who stares at a rainbow disregards the honor of Hashem, and in doing so, upon him we say it would just be better, he should have never been created. The source of halacha, many of you may have heard this and never known where did it come from, like, don't stare at a rainbow.
I was not able to look at a rainbow.
So it's fascinating. So we'll see, there's an actual bracha that we make on a rainbow, and the halacha says you should look to be able to make a bracha, but not stare.
So how long
do you look? To look, that you see that it's there.
And you can say it's beautiful or not.
So I didn't see anything about that. I just saw the Gemara. I don't think Allah could mention that. The Gemara, you can't stare. What's the deal with staring at a rainbow? If you stare at a rainbow, you're disregarding the honor of Hashem. So on some level, the Mefarshim explain, the rainbow represents a manifestation of the honor of Hashem in the world. And therefore, staring at it is a lack of reverence to it. Things which are of special significance, that's inappropriate to stare at that. And somehow the rainbow represents a manifestation of the honor of Hashem. Don't stare. Where do we see that the rainbow represents a manifestation of the honor of Hashem? So the Gemara says this comes from a pasuk in Sefer Yechezkel. The very beginning of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter Aleph, chapter 1, at the end of the chapter, after Yechezkel receives this prophecy of the Maisa Merkava, the glory of Hashem, things which you don't learn publicly. At the end of that, he describes the vision he saw, an insight into God, an insight into the way God runs the world, which is way beyond all of us. He describes the vision as follows. Kimare hakeshas, like the vision of a rainbow, asher yiyeh ba'onan b'yom hageshem, like the vision of a rainbow that's in the clouds after a rainy day, Kain mare hanoiga soviv hu mare demus kvod Hashem. So too was this vision of the glory of Hashem that I saw in the image of Hashem. So he, Yechezkel, the prophet, Ezekiel, in summarizing this prophecy that he received, says, the vision was such, the grandeur, the honor was such, it was like the rainbow in the clouds after a rainy day. So the Gemara derives from there, apparently, the highest of prophecies, the most insightful vision into Hashem, is described as a rainbow, so that when you and I and people see a rainbow, to stare at it would be like staring at the vision of Hashem, and therefore it's inappropriate to do so. Okay, now that doesn't fully... Now we're still left with, like, what in the... In the vision of a rainbow, what is it in a rainbow? Did Yechezkel Hanavi, did the prophet Ezekiel see to compare his vision to? Yes, that was just like a rainbow. When I saw that vision, I was thinking that's like a rainbow. What's in a rainbow that gives us that leads us to halacha that you're not allowed to stare at a rainbow because that would be irreverence to do so. How can you stare at a rainbow? That's like the vision of Hashem. That's like a prophet. See, it saw that. You can't look at a rainbow and see that. So what is it in the rainbow that you see? So I'm not going to fully answer that question. I cannot. But I want to share one thought from the Malbim. The Malbim, one of the classic commentators on Tanakh, on this pasuk, says the following idea. There's a remez, there's a hint in here. Sheha'or shehu echad ba'atzmuso. Light is really one at its core, at its essence, is just white light. How do we get the rainbow? Because that light is refracted through the moisture in the air, similar to a prism. You could do the same thing. You could refract the light through a prism and you get a rainbow. The moisture in the air creates the same thing as a prism, and the white light, which is really only white, gets refracted into its seven different colors. Kein ha'or ha'miyuchad b'shorsho, in the same way as the essence of white light at its root, in this light, in this sense, referring to Hashem himself, just pure light, in whatever that means, in whatever way we can't understand that, is Yisroel Mechulek Bihivoko al Hanhagos HaTachtonim B'Shiva Givonim. So too is Hashem's white light refracted, so to speak, into his way of dealing with the world that we live in, into the seven different sections, so to speak, like a rainbow.
What's that? What section? Seven sections of what?
Oh, that's already Kabbalah. I'm not getting into that. What I will get into, as far as what my understanding allows for, is the same idea. If you take white light and you shoot it through a prism, or you shoot it through the moisture in the air, you end up with a rainbow. You see various different colors. So now, looking on the back side of a prism, or on the rainbow side of the prism, or on the rainbow after it's been refracted from the light, what do you see? You see seven different colors. And they are all different. And they seem to be different aspects, unrelated to each other. They're on a spectrum, but they're different colors along the spectrum of the rainbow. So too do we see various different hanhagas, various different behaviors, ways of dealing with the world in the way that Hashem deals with it. But we only see, in our limited, finite human response, or life that we live, we generally only see like one section of that, what we're living through. Sometimes we perceive more, but we're living on the backside. If you're living on in the red of the rainbow, you only see red. You can't see anything else because your eyeglasses, so to speak, you're wearing red sunglasses. Everything you see comes out red. If I were to tell somebody living in the red spectrum, do you know that this is really white light? I don't know what white light is. It's impossible. I only see the red from what's being refracted. Yet the world is a refraction of God's light. The creation of the world is a refraction. It's all just white. But the world couldn't exist if it was just white. It's just like just going to a movie theater and just shooting a white beam on the screen, you just see white. You need to actually put something in front of the white light. You need to put a film there. As the light gets reflected and refracted through the screen, you actually get an image onto the screen that you can now watch and see. The creation of the world is basically putting a prism through the white light that is Hashem, and what comes out on the other side are all these various, this is going to come out, spheres, seven, but whatever exactly that means, different types of behaviors that we almost perceive Hashem in the way that we live in the world post-prism. But really it's all echad. It's really only one. Even though we don't necessarily perceive it that way, we see a God that sometimes does good things, sometimes does things that seem to us as being very bad, hurtful, painful. But we believe, Bayom Hahu, in that day, Yi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, one day we'll perceive that Hashem's name is one, and that He is one. It's all coming from the same place. Even though in the world we live in now, we don't see it that way. We see lots of different things. We see good, we see bad, we see rachamim, we see din, we see mercy and judgments, and all the different traits of Hashem. They all come to us differently, and He deals with us differently. We see those, that refracted color, but really at its core, at its source, is really only one. It's all echad. Even though we can't see it, but we know that it's really there. It says the Malvim, When Yechezkel Hanavi saw this vision, saw this understanding of the way that Hashem runs the world, what did he compare it to? He compared it to the rainbow. Because the rainbow is a real life vision of what it means to take what seems to be one, white light, pure white light, but when it gets refracted through the atmosphere, it comes out as seven different things. And that is the way that Hashem runs the world. Taking his own pure essence, and whatever that means that he created the world and it gets refracted, I don't understand anything about that. But what we get, the world we live in, you can view this on so many different levels, the different spheros, the worlds of the angels, down to us, all the different worlds, and the way that he represents in this world. We see a refraction, so to speak, of that pure white light because we can't handle pure white light. It's too much. But the rainbow represents that you could take that which is just light, and really it's broken up into many different compartments. But at its core, it's really all one. That's what the rainbow, and that's what Yechezkel Navi used to say, I saw a vision of Hashem, and it was like the rainbow. The rainbow. Because the rainbow has that element to it. And therefore, it's inappropriate to stare at it. Because that's the honor of Hashem. You can see it, you make a bracha on it, but you don't have to stare at it. one of the other commentators mentioned how all the colors like blend into each other. There's no clear mark where you could see like, oh, this is with the end of the red. It's just, it all just sort of blurs, and you get the vision of a rainbow. You could see the different colors, but you can never draw a fine line, and there's really nothing there. There is no rainbow. You couldn't go up to an airplane and actually touch a rainbow. It doesn't exist. All these things are somehow manifestations of the way that Hashem runs and creates the world. So that's the. I didn't see anybody who says this, but I would tie in the idea of not being able to stare at the rainbow because of all it represents. So when Hashem says, I want to create a sign that will be a reminder to me that you really need to be destroyed, but I'm not going to do it. That I created you, man, in this lower of all the worlds with all of your frailties and all of your shortcomings, and I regret and rethink, and I'm not sure, you know, like, I got to deal with you. But this rainbow will sort of be this reminder that I'm not going to do it. This idea of, in this world, the refraction of my light, where I'm not manifest in that clear way, I'm manifest in all of these different ways, and you need to see me through that, this rainbow will be that sign to you that I exist in that pure way. It'll be that reminder to you that that's there, and this will be that sign to me that in this world we live in, this refracted light world, where you perceive rainbow, I won't destroy you. And that will serve as that reminder of the... I'm not sure exactly how to say that. I didn't see anybody. I'm just sort of putting the two together as best I can. But I wonder if that's exactly how that would come out.
Is there any significance to your knowledge on the rare occasion when you see more than one rainbow at the same time?
No, I don't think no. I mean, not just in science, you're asking in Torah thought?
Right.
Not that enough.
I have the blessing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you want to know, just quickly, on the blessing, which is on, your blessing is on page 43. I just want to quickly just conclude with this. And on note 13, on the bottom of page 43, the article brings the text of the blessing. One who sees the rainbow recites the blessing, "Blessed are you, Hashem, our King, our God, King of the universe, who remembers his covenant, is trustworthy in his covenant, and fulfills his word." So the Mishnah Berurah explains, why do we have that last phrase of V'kayim b'ma'amarom? You just said he remembers his covenant, is trustworthy of the covenant, and fulfills his word. That phrase of fulfilling his word is a reference to the initial vow that Hashem said. He took a vow, he'll never destroy us, and then he added a covenant to it. And the text of the blessing reflects, even though you remember your covenant and you'll always be trustworthy in your covenant and keeping it, you are also one who fulfills his word, and even without the covenant would have always kept your word. But we, Noach, demanded a sign to feel confident in populating the world that we won't be destroyed. So you did both, but you are both one who fulfills his word without the covenant, but you also gave us a covenant and will be trustworthy in that as well. Okay, those are some thoughts on the rainbow.
Thank you.